If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home. When I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam podcast here on Inside the Ropes, broadcasting live from not only Lancashire, but also Madrid. It's like WrestleMania 2.
Two locations. That was three, wasn't it?
Three. Well, we're building to it. We don't want to give that away straight. We'll do three locations eventually, but I am joined, as always, by the vivacious Finlay Martin. Hi, Finn. How are you?
Very well. All we've got to do, Kenny, is just work out how to teleport ourselves. You know, once we can work out how to do that, we can do three locations easy. To answer your question, Kenny, I'm doing fabulous. How are you doing? And as you said, you're currently on holiday and yet still podcasting. Your commitment to this brand is, it cannot be questioned.
Well, you know, if people kind of say, oh, you know, do you ever take a day off? And, like, I mean, I can very rarely, but the thing is, like, I kind of have the dream job. And, I mean, you probably felt this at times as well when you were doing Power Slam. Like, you know, even though it's hard work and you do a lot, you're getting an opportunity that, you know, a handful of people in the world get to do, which is have this passion of, you know, loving professional wrestling and getting to sort of, like, put your opinion of that out into the ether, and it's desired enough that people really want to hear or see about it. So I kind of take that as like a, you know, that's brilliant. So the idea of like, oh, I'm in Madrid, can I take an hour out of my day to podcast with Finn? To me, that's just like catching up with a pal for a chat. It doesn't really feel like work. So I'm happy to do it, Finn.
Oh, well, I'm very pleased about that. But you're right, yeah. I mean, when you're doing something that, you know, you really enjoy, does it really feel like work? Well, when I was doing Power Slam, it certainly did. But you look back and you say, well, you know what? Would I have changed places with anyone else? No way.
Exactly. But it's even like now. I mean, you don't need to be doing this, but you do it because you enjoy it, you know? Obviously.
That's right. I'm so filthy rich, Kenny. No, I don't need to work.
No, but you know, there is a business element to it, of course. But at the same time, you know, you're not going to be doing this and watching all these shows and catching up with stuff if you're not enjoying being sort of a part of what's going on.
Absolutely, Kenny. So anyway, how is Madrid? How are things going on? What's happened? Because you flew out, was it yesterday?
Yeah, so originally I was going to fly out on Monday and I wasn't actually feeling too well, so I had to kind of postpone it for a couple of days. But that was fine. So I arrived yesterday and I'm here for the Mad Cool Festival. So tonight's the first night. The headliner tonight is Pearl Jam. So should be pretty exciting. I'm quite keen to see them. And then like Kasabian are there and MGMT. And then tomorrow there's Massive Attack and Franz Ferdinand and Snow Patrol. And then on Saturday there's Depeche Mode, Queens of the Stone Age and Nine Inch Nails. So
wow, that's some big acts, isn't it?
Yeah, so like, I mean, I'm a kind of passive music fan, so I'm just kind of here to hang out with pals and kind of, you know, have a good time. So yesterday I arrived in Madrid, all the other guys were at a water park, so I just came to the apartment and I just kind of like, you know, dumped my bags and went a walk around, and it's a really fun city, it's really nice. So I like to think of myself, Finn, as not being as Scottish as I am. In the sense of, like, I like to think of, like, wherever I go, people just understand me. I'm so fluent in the language of the world, right? So I walk into this little shop, you know, and it's like, you know, in mainland Spain or anywhere in Spain, really, that's touristy, they have photos of the food that look like the photos were taken in 1983, right?
Yeah.
That, you know, pasta that looks like it has, you know, it's been dead and buried a long time. But that's just kind of part of the weird ambience that Spain has. So anyway, I see all these dishes in the window, and I saw Spanish omelette. I thought, well, I mean, that's like, I'm just gonna have a Spanish omelette. I'm quite hungry. I'm gonna try and have because I was quite disappointed to see that right across my apartment is a KFC and a McDonald's, and I was like,
no. That's not even real food, is it?
Well, I mean, I do love McDonald's, like, as a guilty pleasure thing, but I know it's not good, right? I'm not under any illusion that it's like, oh, it's the best food for you. But I was like, you know, I'm in Spain, I want to try something. So I go in and I said, hola, you know, I even did the hello. I said, could I have a Spanish omelette? And I pointed to the Spanish omelette, which I think was tortilla española or torte española, something like that. And the woman looked at me like I'd just handed her a bomb that she had to detonate in 3 minutes. But I mean, I was like, well, I mean, but I'm pointing to the thing. So then she pulls out this like pre-made Spanish omelette. So at least she knows, at least we're in the ballpark, right? Yeah. And then she just like cuts a slice of it. And then like, it's one of those, it's quite a high countertop. So I can't see what she's doing, like where the low countertop is on her end. And so she takes this part of the omelette, and the next thing I know, she hands me a baguette. I said, oh, sorry, omelette, Spanish omelette. And she was like, she'd put an omelette in a baguette for me. And I'm going, is this a fucking laugh? What's going on here? So then I'm going... Now,
I mean, the real problem, Kenny, was that she didn't deep fry it. That's what the real problem here was, wasn't it?
I mean, that's an unwarranted dig, Finlay Martin, that you should be ashamed of yourself as. But yes, that's true. They did not deep fry it, which is a problem, because everything should be deep fried. Mars bars, Starburst, anyway. So now, initially when I'd ordered the omelette, I have to admit this to you, Finn, right? I was feeling quite... I was like, fuck it, I just want to eat what I want, right? So I thought, I'll have a Spanish omelette and I'll have some chips with it as well. Because I love chips.
You're on
right?
holiday, Kenny. You know?
I'm on holiday. I'm going to have some chips with my Spanish omelette. So she hands me this baguette. And I'm trying to explain, you know, in the nicest way possible. I want the omelette, not a baguette. This was not going through. So then I said, oh, can you heat it up? No idea what I'm saying. I had to point to the microwave. And then for whatever reason, I thought that me kind of like lifting myself 3 inches off the ground was indicative of what heating it up would be. It was not. And so I get it, right? And it's like, I looked at the menu, I was going, oh my God, I'm going to be charged €15 for this. I was like, oh God, I've been had here, haven't I? So I hand my 20 over, and then she just hands me €17 back. Okay, cool. And then I go upstairs, and I just open up my, you know, the packaging, and I'm sitting there with a big fucking bucket of chips and a Spanish omelette, which is the main ingredient of a Spanish omelette, which I didn't know, is potato.
No, I didn't know that either.
So I was basically eating a potato, baguette, and chips. That was my meal.
I mean, at least you got value for money. €3, I mean, you can't complain, can you?
Well, I mean, you can. That's the beauty of podcasting. But, you know, yes, you shouldn't be able to complain. You shouldn't be given an outlet to complain. But I did do that.
She wasn't going to understand you anyway. I mean, the complaint would have fallen on deaf ears.
she didn't get it at all. But luckily, later on in the night, one of my friends has a friend who lives in Madrid, and she and her boyfriend said, oh, come out with us to the pub and stuff and watch the football. And we tried like, some authentic Spanish cuisine and stuff, and that was really nice. I drank vodka, and in Spain, they don't do measures, so they just fill half the glass with vodka. And the second time, I tried to be like, oh, can I have a tiny bit? She laughed at me, Finn. She laughed at me as she poured me a bigger vodka. But, you know, I can't talk about myself here because, you know, we did go and watch the football. And I'm sorry. I thought it was coming home. I think a lot of people thought it was coming home, but it's not coming home. Your team is out. I hope that you're holding up okay.
Well, I've got to say, I really got into it. You know, watched the Colombia game. The Sweden game that took place after that took place on Saturday after we last podcasted. Yeah, they won 2-0, didn't they? England won 2-0 mm-hmm. there. They looked very commanding performance, I felt. And they got in there with Croatia and they got that early goal. And I mean, admittedly, I don't know much about football, right? I am very much a layperson when it comes to football. Don't profess to be an expert, but I felt that Croatia played better. I just felt that they ran rings around England and were the better team. And
I actually thought in the first half that England were great, but the second half just seemed to be a different team.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, just, you know, I mean, just the way that Croatia controlled the ball, they just seemed to have England on the run in almost not the entire second half and not the entire extra time, but a good portion of it. And yeah, pains me to say it, but I mean, I think the better team did win. So, which is really sad. You know, I got into football again because I'm not a fan. But, you know, World Cup has that effect on you, especially when your team does well. And I mean, you know, I really feel for people, for the team and for people who really are big fans. You know, it was very, very disappointing. I was a bit disappointed when they went out. But as I said, you know, if you watch the game, you're like, well, you know, Croatia were better. That's my opinion anyway. I could be wrong. But I mean, since this is a real sport that's dependent upon, you know, how many goals are put in the back of the net, I think that's a fair comment.
See, the thing, to me, it's like England got down to the final four in the World Cup. Like, that's not a bad way to bow out of things.
No, definitely not. I mean, definitely not. I think what it is, you know, the further they go in the tournament, the higher the expectations are. So that doesn't really mollify the disappointment. I mean, in many ways, it sort of heightens it because people think, oh, they might get to the final and they could win. So in many ways, it's more disappointing for them to go out later. But I think people will look back on it and say, well, yeah, this, all the pundits were saying that, weren't they? This is a different England team that really want to be there. And, you know, it's a young team and blah, blah, blah. People have already heard all this. You don't need to listen to me going on about it.
I really felt behind them. I know you and many other friends from England who I turned to my friend at one point. I said, I'm tense by default here, but if this was Scotland, I wouldn't be able to cope with it. I mean, yeah. Luckily, that's nothing I'm ever going to have to deal with in my lifetime. But, you know, I thought it was great. And, you know, now we've got the European Championship taking place in 2 years, which is taking place all around Europe. And I think the semi-finals and the final are going to be at Wembley in England. And I think one of the quarter-finals is going to be in Hampden and Glasgow and stuff. So that should be good. Two more years and there'll be some more stuff. And hopefully, kind of like this year, it unites people into watching football and kind of getting into it.
Yeah, definitely. And as you were saying, this is a young team. So, you know, 2 years from now, they could be a heck of a lot better. So we will see. But yeah, so the disappointment of England crashing out. But, you know, we do have something to look forward to. Extreme rule. Well, firstly, Donald Trump in the UK. You timed that holiday brilliantly, didn't you, Kenny? Donald Trump on a 2-day state visit of the UK. Which is, I think is he here now? He's arriving this afternoon anyway. We're recording this on Thursday. And of course, we've got Extreme Rules on Sunday. So, I mean, it's not all bad news, Kenny, is it?
Well, I'm really glad to see that the WWE Hall of Famer is coming to the UK. Oh, sorry, President of the United States. I got confused there. I thought he was a mockery television star. But I was wrong. Do you know, did you see the big... the big baby thing, the there's like a big in London. There's a big balloon baby of Trump that's going to be flown over London tomorrow when he's in London.
I read about it today on Twitter. Lots of people were tweeting about this. Yes, I did hear about it.
And then he's going to be. I think he's actually in Scotland tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow.
Yeah. And I believe he's playing golf there as well on Saturday. Is he going to? Because he's got a golf resort there, hasn't he? Wasn't there a story a while back that he banned sales of iron brew in his golf resort?
I mean, if I didn't hate the bastard before, right? So he's got this golf course, and there was a very famous story about he basically wanted to buy this land to do a golf course, and one of the people didn't want to sell to him. I don't think the guy did sell in the end. So I think that there's this golf course that he's built, and then there's just this one house near it of this guy who's just like, nope, I'm not selling to you. and apparently, like, they won't serve iron brew because it might stain the carpets.
It's fantastic, isn't it?
Get a life, do you know what I mean?
Does he not know they've removed all the sugar from it?
I know, now it's practically a vitamin.
So yeah, apparently he's going to be there tomorrow and Saturday at his golf resort.
So that does rule out an Extreme Rules run-in. So we can take that off our prediction sheet. No Donald Trump running on Sunday.
Yes.
But there's a ton to talk about, tons of stuff to talk about. I do want to say very quickly, actually, just to kind of, if you don't mind, plug something. It was, I think it had been announced by last week, but it's been announced, obviously, that I'm going to be the host of the Hooked on Wrestling shows for Jeff Jarrett. And we did the video last week and all that kind of stuff. And it's now been announced on Wednesday, the 25th of July. That particular show is going to be streamed live on Fight TV.
Wow.
So,
is this the first time anything like this has happened for you?
Yes, yeah, 100%. So, but I do want to say, and I mean this 100%, because I've had my issues with Jeff Jarrett in the past, as people are very well aware, but I wouldn't have signed up to do this if there was restrictions on what I'm allowed to ask him about. That was, him and I had a conversation before it was all signed off, and I said, look, you know, we need to be able to talk about anything. We need to be able to bring anything up. And, you know, he's got to trust me that I'm going to bring up what I feel wrestling fans want to hear about, but also I'm not going to bring up things that, like, so for example, I'm going to have to touch upon, you know, him getting involved with Karen Angle and that kind of being detrimental to his TNA run.
Yeah.
But at the same time, there's kids involved, so I don't want to really be, like, I don't want to do anything that's kind of like TMZ-like or anything like that. So,
sure.
But he's got to trust me, which he is doing, so I appreciate it. But yeah, there's no topic off limits. It's going to be pretty exciting. Sheffield, I guess, are in for a treat because nothing like this has ever happened before. So yeah, and Fight TV are working with Jarrett. I think they're also going to be streaming all the events from StarCast later on this year in Chicago. Right. So, but yeah, so if you are somebody who is interested in seeing what it's going to be like, Wednesday, the 25th of July, I think it's 8:15 p.m. is the advertised start time for me on stage with Double J.
Yeah, well, I mean, as when we were talking about his Hall of Fame induction earlier in the year, Kenny, it's, I mean, he's had such a long career, he's done so much. I think it could be really interesting. I mean, I'm looking forward to hearing about it. I must watch the live stream, you know, just to see, you know, you in action, Kenny. But he's, in all seriousness, he's done so much in his career that if he's going to be forthcoming with his responses, and that's the key here, I think it could be amazing. I think it'd be a hell of a... I think the shows could be terrific.
Well, that because they'd ask me, you know, can you give us a quote for the press release? And my quote was like, I genuinely do think if he's willing to open up and not be sort of political, he has one of the most fascinating stories in wrestling. You know, guy whose dad was a promoter, had to come out of his dad's shadows, became an international kind of superstar wrestler, developed this friendship with, you know, Russo, went to WCW, WCW dies, he starts his own promotion, he tries to fight Vince, it all falls apart. You know, there's so many facets to it that, you know, 90 minutes isn't even enough time to scratch the surface. But,
no, definitely not. Definitely.
But I'm excited about it. So, and also tickets have gone on sale for Edge. VIP is going quite quickly. So if you do want to join us for Edge, the tickets for London, Manchester and Glasgow are already on sale at insidetheropes.co.uk/Edge. And the Dublin and Belfast shows will go on sale next Friday, July 20th. Just stay tuned to our social media for the links. But that should be pretty good. Hopefully we'll manage to get you to one of those Edge shows.
Yeah, definitely. I'm sure I'll be at the Manchester show. And, you know, I was always a huge fan of Edge. And I mean, I think he's... I think he would be forthright at the events. I mean, he's got no political agenda. You know, he's never going to get back involved in wrestling. So I think, you know, that will be, I'll really look forward to those. I think, and the way he retired in 2011 was really, I think, quite underrated how emotional that was for him. And just the state he was in physically, and just, he just had to get out of the business, got out and, he's living, you know, he's not looked back once from what I understand. I mean, I know he does the podcast and he does do things connected with pro wrestling, but he seems to be living and obviously he's doing these shows, so it's not like he's shunning pro wrestling, but he's moved on very successfully. And I think he's really enjoying life and made some great money. And I think it's it's obviously sad that he had to retire when he did, but it was the right decision for him because his neck injury was that bad.
Yeah, so it'll be a pretty interesting story to talk to him in September and October. Also, Pat Patterson, obviously, as well, is going to be in Glasgow and London with us. InsideRopes.co.uk/Pat Patterson for that. So, yeah, that's all the plugs at the way. But anyway, tons of wrestling news to talk about. Let's kick it off with, obviously, The Undertaker had recently made his appearance at Madison Square Garden last weekend, a six-man tag with, it was him, Braun Strowman and Roman Reigns against Kevin Owens, Baron Corbin and Elias. Big response, big pop for Undertaker. He was moving quite well. I saw some of the clips. He was moving pretty well. They lit Madison Square Garden up in purple. But I want to ask you something kind of semi-related, and this is something that came out from Cage Side Seats, I think it was, the other day, where they had said that there is a rumour, this was also covered in various other places, a rumour that John Cena and Undertaker might have a rematch at SummerSlam from their WrestleMania thing.
Their WrestleMania classic.
With the idea that this would be, you know, the idea, I guess, is that it would be like a kind of multi-match feud.
Yeah.
Rather than just a one and done. So, you know, you're probably one of the best people to ask because you do have a lot of fondness for the Undertaker character over the years, but at the same time, you also do not have a lot of fondness for the John Cena character. So I guess my question is John Cena Undertaker at SummerSlam, is there something to it? Do you think it's interesting? What would the angle be? Do you think that could make it good? And just what do you make of the whole idea that that might be one of the featured matches in Brooklyn?
I can believe that the match might happen. I mean, the whole layout of the match at WrestleMania just seemed like a one-off. I mean, it didn't seem to me like it was the sort of match that was going to lead to a rematch. I mean, we know they both appeared at the greatest Royal Rumble event in Saudi Arabia, obviously in separate matches. So nothing was really mentioned or indicated that they might clash again. I can believe that it will happen as like a nostalgia match. I have no desire to see the match. I didn't really want to see the first match. I mean, we had to put up with all those promos from Cena, which were, by the end, excruciating. And then they gave us that really short match in which Cena had basically no offense and did the job really quickly. Don't have any desire, Kenny, to see them wrestle again. It's not interesting to me at all. I'm sure if they do clash at SummerSlam, the match will be longer, and one imagines that Cena would score the pin there to set up another rematch at some point down the line, perhaps at the huge event in Australia later in the year. Cena's been advertised for that, hasn't he?
Undertaker's already advertised to face Triple H at that show.
Oh, sorry, of course he is, yeah. Yeah, that's absolutely right. That's already been announced. But yeah, maybe they could do like another match, WrestleMania next year, or who knows where. You know, to me, Undertaker's just now this nostalgia act. I'm not really deriving any pleasure from seeing him performing in this role. If he is, then he's obviously earned it because he's been in the company since 1990 and he's a legend. And, you know, if he wants to do this and WWE likes booking him in this role, then that's fine. You know, and I, you know, it's if I don't want to watch it, that doesn't matter because other people probably do. And if other people are enjoying it, just because I don't, is largely irrelevant. But to me, it's what can they really gain from a rematch between Cena and Undertaker? Unless, of course, you know, it's a three-match program. But I don't know, Kenny. It just felt like the match they had at WrestleMania, it just felt like that was it. It didn't feel like that was going to lead to a rematch. And if it was going to lead to a rematch, then they surely would have booked the WrestleMania match differently. So if they do the match at SummerSlam, I don't quite know how they'll promote it. They probably won't. They'll probably just send the two guys out there on the night, or maybe they'll do like one square off in the ring or something like that. But I certainly don't want to see a long promotional job for a rematch of a match that was so brief and had such a decisive outcome. So I suppose as a nostalgia exercise, some people will enjoy it, and we will see, I suppose. Well, are you interested in seeing a rematch between Cena and Undertaker?
No, I'm not. This one kind of irks me more than a lot of other things because, you know, I was the one guy kind of trying to champion in the lead up to WrestleMania. The thing that's so problematic about this is that this is so easy. Cena and Undertaker, so easy. Two megastars. I fully believe that most people who are listening to this podcast, and I don't mean that in any disrespectful way, I think most people who are listening to this, if we said, right, here's a pad and a bit of paper, you've got an hour, give me a storyline to get them to this pay-per-view. You could do it. Easily.
Sure.
And I think that's the problem, is that it's not like you go, oh, well, you know, Cena and Undertaker, it's just impossible to make a program work. But I don't think that the idea of here's a big match, there doesn't need to be a story or a build, I don't think that's working anymore. And the reason I say it is because there's a lot of people, and, you know, we're in this kind of bubble of who we talk to, right? You know, so whether it's like listeners or friends that you talk to about wrestling or whatever. But I've noticed a lot more people in recent weeks being very agitated by the lack of storytelling going on right now in WWE. And I think that this would just be another step in that direction. And I think that if you were to do it with no story and just have it be really kind of generic and boring, I think you'd actually turn people away. I think it'd be another thing where people would go, do you know what? If even with Cena and Undertaker, they're not trying, let's just leave it.
Yeah.
And I hope I'm wrong, but I've been saying I hope I'm wrong for ages now, and I continue to not be wrong about it. So yeah. Hopefully something is there. I'm not as quick. I know some people are kind of just like, Vince McMahon, you know, should not be working in wrestling. He should be, you know, sit put out to pasture and all that. I'm not one who says that as frivolously as everyone else does. But at the same time, stuff like this doesn't really help his case.
No, it absolutely does not help his case. And yeah, you go back to the WrestleMania program between Cena and Undertaker, and you look at it and you think, you know, this is something that Vince has had all this time, you know, this Cena-Undertaker match. It happened years ago before Cena was a huge star. He must have come up with all these different ways of promoting it, and he promoted it in that fashion and then gave us that match. And you do wonder how a guy who changed the entire business and managed to negotiate those massive deals with Fox and USA, how a guy who could be that brilliant at so many things in the past and currently as well could deliver something so lame. You know, it was just feeble, wasn't it? The Cena versus Undertaker build.
I don't think people anymore, like, it's different if you're doing a thing where you're going, okay, here's a Greatest Royal Rumble or here's a super show in Australia. I don't have any problem with you advertising for a match on that. And then that's all you're getting. Because that's all it is, right?
Yeah.
But WrestleMania, come on. WrestleMania, have respect for the brand that people pay thousands of dollars every year to go and see. Have respect for the people who put their time and their energy and their interest level into you. That's how I see it. And, you know, it's kind of part of this bigger conversation that I'm sure we're probably going to have either this week or soon. But, you know, NXT, I was talking to David about this, and NXT is almost like, it's almost like a last night with a lover before they leave you. You know, like, it's because, you know, you look at, you know, Velveteen Dream or Ricochet or Johnny Gargano or Tommaso Ciampa, and you go, God, they're so good, and you love watching their work, but, you know, I'm not confident that Vince McMahon or the main roster would book any of those four in any sort of meaningful way.
No. I think Velveteen Dream's going to be all right, but I do worry about Johnny Gargano and Tommaso Ciampa. I do fear for them. I fear for so many people in NXT. You know, the Kyle O'Reillys, Adam Cole, Bobby Fish, War Raiders. When I look at War Raiders, I just think, you know, Highlanders Part 2. You know, that is one thing we don't need a sequel to. You know, we had enough Highlander sequels in the 80s. We don't want a Highlanders Part 2 in WWE.
I do understand, you know, people kind of say something. Why can't WWE just be NXT? And NXT is not the brand that would get you on Fox and all that kind of stuff. It's a different thing. So I'm not even saying WWE, the main roster brand, has to be like NXT. I understand that when you go to the main roster, things are going to have to change. But I just don't see why elements of NXT can't be kept on the main roster. You know? Like, elements of what makes people entertaining or interesting or whatever. And, you know, you look at Johnny Gargano's story and stuff and you go, I mean, you should not be watching NXT going, I hope that these guys stay here.
No, you shouldn't. You absolutely shouldn't. You should be excited about their prospects and the possibilities of what they might do on the main roster, which is what they're all in NXT to do, to receive that promotion to the main roster so they can be seen by a larger audience and make, presumably, the bigger money.
And if you look at the main roster right now, there are so many talented people in that main roster, but why are we not seeing a babyface Elias? Why are we not seeing a heel cocky Bobby Roode? Why are we not seeing Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt, you know, doing mad skits at the Hardy compound or whatever? Like, why are we not seeing all this stuff? Why instead are we watching, you know, Axel and Bo Dallas, you know, who you know, no disrespect to the guys, but they are a jobber tag team.
Sure.
Bringing down the tag team champions. We've got Roman Reigns in the same problem we've had for 3 years. It's a bit of a mess.
And it absolutely is, Kenny. You know, just one last thing about Cena Undertaker. You were just saying there about WrestleMania and Cena Undertaker. You would have had a lot of fans who just come back each year to watch WWE at WrestleMania. They say, right, we're going to watch WrestleMania because it's the one time of year when it's huge. We've got to watch it. You know, just like people watching the FA Cup final or the World Cup, as we just talked about, or the Wimbledon tennis final. So you have this thing where for once a year, these people who were diehard fans will then come back and watch it. So all those lapsed fans who were coming back for one night then saw the Cena Undertaker match. And you think to yourself, all those lapsed fans who are coming back for one night, who you might be able to hook and turn into semi-regular or regular fans again, if you give them something, you know, outstanding or compelling or something that's just like, you know, that's going to, you know, arouse those feelings of being a fandom again. They gave them that Cena Undertaker match at WrestleMania, and people who were coming back for one night would have thought, this is why I don't watch this stuff anymore. That would have been your reaction, wouldn't it, Kenny?
Yeah, because what it used to be, and we were last WrestleMania we watched on Retro was WrestleMania 14, and it's like, there was nothing you wanted to do more than watch Raw the next night. What's going to happen with Steve Austin, who's now the WWF champion? Is Mike Tyson going to stick around or not? What's going to happen to Shawn Michaels or Triple H or Undertaker and Kane or Legion of Doom have now got Sonny as their manager and, you know, Chainsaw Charlie and Cactus Jack are the tag team champion? All these things you want to find out the answers. And yeah, at WrestleMania, I don't think that people are tuning in and going, you know, like people aren't tuning in and feeling that way coming out of it, and I think that's a real problem. But I'm gonna, you know, do something we don't normally do. We've actually got a ton of Q&A that we're gonna do in the overrun, but I'm actually gonna pull one of them over to the main show, just because of what we're talking about right now. And I think it's just because I want to get your take on this. Where do you see, like, just overall, where do you see the WWE product right now? Because I've noticed a lot of people who are messaging us, who are getting involved, who are feeling very frustrated. They're not watching Raw and SmackDown every week. They're maybe checking out the YouTube clips, but even then, they're maybe faltering from doing that. They're feeling very disenfranchised. What is your kind of, like, summary evaluation of WWE as a main roster right now?
I will say that on Raw this week, there's Raw and SmackDown this week, one thing happened on each show that really gave me hope. The Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins match, I felt like that was a real step forward. And the Andrade Almas versus Sin Cara match on SmackDown, I felt like that was a real good building block for Almas at last. I mean, the guy's just disappeared. I forgot about, I think when he's coming up, you're thinking, when Cara was in the ring, you're thinking, oh, wow, yeah, he's in that feud with Almas. It's like, oh, they're finally going to further that in some fashion. And I really enjoyed that match. And Sin Cara was like really over as a babyface. And obviously a lot of that was down to being Almas really good as a heel. And I thought that was a really good building block match. Same applies to Drew versus Seth on Raw. They started slow. It was almost like an old school match with like wear down holds, which some people would call rest holds, but like wear down holds before the match just slowly accelerated and was just like dynamite at the end. So if you look at those two matches, Kenny, it just shows that WWE can still do it. It can still prepare things for the future. So as far as, you know, you're wanting me to give it a score on the sliding scale of awfulness, where does Raw, where does SmackDown sit at the moment? And I think wrestling or WWE or WWF, as it once was, has been far, far worse than it is now. I think part of the problem is that we've been spoiled by so much good wrestling and we've got access to so much material now. I mean, you know, you go back to...
what I was going to say was, do you think the problem right now for WWF fans / WWE fans is that there's no long-term stories that people are enjoying anymore? Like, if you're a WWE fan, you know, 10 years ago, if you'd said, right, Kenny, tell me a recent feud that was great, and I'd say, well, Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho, 6 months, absolutely great. Whereas now, I can't really point you to anything on the main roster in the last 12 months that's been like a really good through thread of a story from start to finish. And is that part of the problem, do you think?
Oh, yeah, absolutely it is, yeah. I mean, it's just like, as I was just talking about there, the Sin Cara versus Almas thing, that actually lasted over a period of a number of weeks, but they just forgot about it for a number of those weeks. And as did I. I forgot these two guys were even in a feud. And you're like, oh, yeah, they are. And nothing was done. They could have just both done promos before that match on SmackDown this week. That would have been a nice little touch, just to remind us that these two guys don't like each other. And, okay, they showed the angle where Almas attacks Sin Cara backstage, but that was just such a lazy, you know, uninspired way of promoting this match, which fans still actually responded to in a huge way, I felt, considering that these were two guys who hadn't been on TV for weeks. But you're absolutely right, Kenny. Yeah, in terms of long-term storyline plotting, it's something that they're just not really that interested in anymore. I mean, the whole... When you think about it, what WWE should be doing is they should be preparing right now the talent who are going to headline in 3, 6, 9 months' time. They should have enough confidence in us as viewers that they can promote stuff in the back. You know, they can be elevating acts on the bottom of the card and have them do promos where they're making noises about moving up the ranks and issuing subtle challenges. WWE should think that give us enough credit that we can absorb or digest or concentrate on more than one storyline per act at a time. So that's what they should be doing. So if you've got Samoa Joe there, if he's out there on pro, he could do a promo like next week on SmackDown. Actually, he'll probably return next week on SmackDown because I think he's going to do something with AJ Styles at SummerSlam. That's what I think will be the SummerSlam match, Styles versus Samoa Joe. But in recent weeks, we could have just seen him on TV where he's saying, you know, I haven't been used. I'm really frustrated. You know, why am I being left at home? This is not the way you treat Samoa Joe. Same applies to Sheamus and Cesaro. What's happened to them, Kenny? They've just like vanished. You know, they've vanished from
I think Sheamus is injured, but yeah, I take your point. We've not had any, we don't know. We've not been given any information about them.
Exactly. I mean, those guys, or they could just be doing stuff like that where the guys are just given a little bit of TV time, you know, 30 seconds, 45 seconds, where they're just talking about how they think that what's going on is a great injustice. When I come back, there's going to be hell to pay. I'm not putting up with this. I should be wrestling this guy. I should be fighting that guy, blah, blah, blah. So you're sort of setting things up for the future. And that then when he finally returns in 1, 2, 3, 4, however many weeks time, then you can hack back to that. You can talk about that. So, yes, Samoa Joe's really miffed. Gets in the ring, beats somebody down. You know, you can put the, you know, jobber acts in their acts who aren't really that important. And they can be then, you know, an expendable act that can be then sacrificed to this guy that then you're going to be building up into a title contender in a number of weeks or a number of months time. So you've got a long term storyline. It's not hard to tell this. And then they've got a reason to challenge this top guy in a certain amount of period's time. So yeah, absolutely, the long-term storytelling, something that WWE can do. We know it can do it. Absolutely, it can do it. It's not like they've forgotten how to do it. They just can't be asked to do it, Kenny, because they don't have to.
You know, it's funny because the best way I can describe to, because people, I think sometimes people look to me. Like, people who listen to this podcast look to me as a barometer of, well, Kenny's always super positive. So if he's not super positive, then maybe it is, you know, maybe it is pretty bad. And for me, the best thing I can tell you is that when I watched the Money in the Bank takeover, you know, the one that opened with Danny Burch and Oney Lorcan against the Undisputed Era, and it had the Velveteen Dream and Ricochet, and that great main event with Ciampa and Gargano, that the way that that show made me feel as a wrestling fan is the way that I love to feel, and I don't feel very often watching WWE. And it's like, I'm so excited about it that I almost like, you know, I want to text you and go, oh, Finn, what do you think of this match? Or like, I want to, you know, fantasy book what might happen next, or you know, you get really into it.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of times with the main roster, even when there's a good show, it's, I don't have that feeling that I have with NXT, because NXT kind of, I feel like I'm in safe hands. And I know when I watch the next TV show that even though it might not be, you know, so like Aleister Black, I wasn't really crazy about the fact that he was in a feud with Lars Sullivan, but I knew they'd do a decent enough job that I could just enjoy it. Whereas in the main roster, I feel like I watch something happen and then I'm kind of on tenterhooks and on edge that they might fuck it up, or when they're going to fuck it up, or whatever it would be. So I think that's, for me anyway, just as a viewer, that's my issue, is that I would like to get back to a point where I can watch a main roster pay-per-view and I can enjoy it, I can want to see what's going to happen next, and I can feel comfortable enough as a viewer that they're going to take care of me and make sure I enjoy myself.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I'm in full agreement. I mean, NXT does it right. And they've only got a one-hour program each week to promote all the feuds that are going on. Whereas, you know, we've got 3 hours on Raw and 2 hours on SmackDown. I mean, part of the problem from years ago, Kenny, you know, is that we... The reason why years ago wrestling, WWE or WWF many years ago, is in some ways held in higher regard, is that we didn't have an NXT to contrast it with. So that's the problem when overall standards raise, is that I think, you know, people get spoiled and want more. And there's nothing wrong with that. I absolutely think wrestling should always be better than it is, or at least as good as it can be. That's something I've said many times before. And WWE can certainly be a hell of a lot better than it is right now. But I think if you watch Raw and SmackDown this week, there were some good matches on there. I mean, the Dolph versus Seth main event was terrific. I really enjoyed that. I mean, there've been times in the past where, you know, you'd be like, you know, I remember when I first started watching wrestling, you'd have like maybe two good matches a year on pay-per-view from World Wrestling Federation. You know, like it was like people like SummerSlam 91 with Bret Hart and Mr. Perfect. Oh, that match was amazing. And it's like we get matches like that all the time now. But back then, you get maybe a match like that maybe once or twice a year. I think 91 you had Ultimate Warrior versus Randy Savage at WrestleMania 7. And then you had Bret Hart versus Kurt Hennig, Mr. Perfect at SummerSlam 91. And it's hard to really name any other I know they had fewer pay-per-views then, of course. And it's hard to really name that many other pay-per-view matches that year that were outstanding. And we get outstanding matches all the time from WWE or NXT now. So I think, you know, it's good that standards and expectations have risen. But I still think there is a lot of good stuff to be found on Raw and SmackDown each week. But, you know, I'm in full agreement that the storytelling could be a hell of a lot better than it is.
And actually, just to go off that, like I was going to say, because this question was sent in to us and we were going to cover it in the overrun, but I think now is probably the best time to do it because it really ties in with what we're talking about. Samuel Wallace says, considering how much negativity there is around WWE right now, what do you think is the worst era of WWE's product? I'm just going to sit back because I don't know where this is going to go. What are some of the worst, and is that much worse than it is now?
Well, 1991 was dreadful for all sorts of reasons. You know, it was just like dated talent, dated formula. Obviously, there was all the scandals as well, which was just a depressing. I mean, this was pre Superstars of Wrestling, so I was just still a fan at this point. I didn't really know I didn't know anywhere near as much as I would learn in years to come about what was going on in 1991. And it was depressing enough, knowing what I knew from reading the American wrestling magazines. You look at late 94 through to 1995. I mean, that was indefensible as well. You know, we had Diesel as champion. I mean, Diesel wasn't, let's not get into whether Diesel was a terrible champion or not, because this was a very difficult time for the company. But, you know, they made Mabel King of the Ring in 1995. And it was just, I mean, the whole product just desperately needed to move on. Part of the thing, again, and this was very much like NXT with WWE now, I was a huge ECW fan in 1995. ECW's creative peak was 94 through to 96. And ECW was just like knocking them dead at that point. I mean, it was far more ahead of the curve and far better than what the other promotions were doing than NXT is now. even though a lot of the ECW matches weren't that amazing, Paul Heyman with his editing techniques would conceal many of his performers' flaws. So when you watched his TV show, you would see the very best, you would see like a version of the talent that you would never see if you saw them live. 94, 95 was really bad. A lot of the Attitude Era stuff. I mean, I think certainly February through to May 1999 was when Vince Russo was at his most outrageous. I mean, this was after it's when WCW was falling apart. So WWF was just doing all sorts of crazy things. You go back and look at the wrestling then, most of it wasn't that good. I mean, I'm sure you would agree with that, Kenny. A lot of the stuff on the cards was not that good. I know, I was at WrestleMania 15 in Philadelphia. Show was awful.
Yeah, no, but, you know, the stuff that you were saying kind of ties in, though, to what I was saying. Like, so, like, 91 for me, I remember, like, through rose-tinted glasses, because all I really saw of 91 was, you know, the pay-per-views. Mm. And I actually quite liked, you know, the big matches in WrestleMania 7, the big matches in SummerSlam 91. So I didn't watch it week to week. But you know, 95 is just the worst. The worst.
That's the worst.
But like February to May of 99, I think the reason for me that I don't see that as anywhere near bad as you do is because the in-ring stuff doesn't really bother me. And I felt like with 99, what was there was so much story stuff. Some of it was good, some of it was terrible. But you were never bored.
You never were. You're absolutely right.
And that's the key, I think.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, I think really, I remember being very worried after Survivor Series 2001. You know, Steve Austin turned babyface. We had the resumption of the Austin versus McMahon feud with Austin as a face and McMahon as a heel, which had been done to death in 98 and 99. You know, saw Chris Jericho's double champion. Didn't really see him as a top guy. Never have done, if I'm honest. So, you know, similarly, the run-up to WrestleMania 18 felt like a huge step backwards there with them bringing the NWO in. You know, I mean, I know they got a huge buy rate at the No Way Out pay-per-view in 2002. And everyone remembers the Rock and Hollywood Hogan square off there. But, I mean, that aside, that was a very difficult time for WWF just before it became WWE as well. I mean, Steve Austin quit in 2002, June 2002, for many reasons, and they were bloody good reasons, Kenny. You know, I remember wrote about this in some detail in Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam years. You know, so I think things have been much, much worse. You know, I mean, 2002 gave us, you know, Katie Vick. It gave us the Billy and Chuck wedding that never was. I mean, you know, WWE, I don't think has ever done anything that bad since, you know. So there's been a lot of times when it's been worse, I feel, than it is now. You know, I think fans have been spoiled by so much quality material, and I think the standards have increased. And I think that, as I said, I'm not going to repeat myself. I am going to repeat myself. That's obviously a good thing. But I think that's partly why people feel sort of disappointed by what's going on at the moment. I think, you know, even though the promotion for Extreme Rules has been, let's face it, woeful, the show, I think, will still deliver on Sunday. There'll still be a lot of good matches. And I think afterwards people say, well, yeah, the hype wasn't very good, but wow, the performers, you know, really delivered on the night. So I think that's something that we should as fans try and concentrate on rather than the aspects that could be better. You know, obviously say that and suggest that, and yeah, it could be better, but I think there's still a lot of good stuff going on.
Yeah, you know, I can concur with that. I think that there is good stuff. You know, Braun Strowman having the briefcase, Ronda Rousey's doing great. I think the Team Hell No stuff's really funny. So I think there's definitely positives, but I definitely think that the story stuff is that it's one of its lowest points in terms of them doing anything to keep you interested.
I think the frustration is derived from the fact that WWE has got so much amazing talent right now that if the stories were as good as the talent, how good could this be?
It would be insane. Absolutely insane. So yeah, and we'll keep an eye on that. Let's kind of go through the Extreme Rules card.
Okay.
And we'll kind of touch on parts of Raw that's happened. So obviously the main event of the show is going to be Bobby Lashley against Roman Reigns. We obviously had the big pull apart brawl on Raw. Now I wanted to read you this quote from the Observer this week, which I thought was pretty interesting about this feud. And apparently the website Fightful ran a story about a WWE production document that listed Paul Heyman as being a travelling Raw writer and helping put together the Reigns and Lashley face-to-face at the start of this week's show and the later Lashley interview segment. From what we're told, Heyman was in Boston, as the story stated, but he is not on the writing team. He was there to look over aspects of the Reigns and Lashley segments mentioned. Heyman being there to look over the segments that lead to the Lesnar program makes sense, since Heyman did the same for Goldberg when he was in the program with Lesnar. Heyman produced every Goldberg segment and helped write every Goldberg interview. Lashley and Heyman were close, dating back to WWE developmental. I don't know how close they are now, if at all, but when Lashley was fighting in MMA, he always talked glowingly about Heyman. So I just wondered what you made of that, and Heyman's kind of, do you think that if that's true, you know, and he was there, and did you see a difference?
Well, I felt that the segment on that kicked off Raw this week between Reigns and Lashley, I really enjoyed it. I thought the fans were really into it, far more than I anticipated. It definitely had a Lesnar feel to it. You know, you could have put Lesnar in the Lashley role and it would have just, I don't know whether it would have been better or worse. Possibly it would have been better. I don't know. I mean, this was better, I think, than really any of the Lesnar versus Reigns segments prior to WrestleMania. I thought this was really well done, and it went on and on and on, and the fans were reacting to every part of it. So it did feel like a Heyman segment, and I'm sure he was very, very pleased with the way it played out. So, yeah, does that answer your question, Kenny?
Yeah, no, it does. I actually thought that, because I know that when David and I talked about it, David had said he wasn't really hooked on the segment on Raw on Monday because he kind of felt that the feud wasn't really that hot. And it went from like 0 to 100 straight away. And I do understand that criticism of it. But for me, it really worked. For whatever reason, it really worked. And it does feel like now that I'm seeing that Heyman was there, it kind of makes sense, because I can completely see Heyman kind of saying, you know, if these guys, apparently the directive for WWE was Vince didn't want to mention Brock Lesnar because that's not what they're promoting right now. They're promoting Extreme Rules. They want him in. Now, we can get into whether that's a good idea or a bad idea, but if that's the narrative that he's going with, then you needed to amp up Lashley and Reigns and make it interesting, and I think they did that. So if Heyman's there around making stuff like this happen, then good. I hope he continues to be, because I think when it's more realistic, everybody benefits.
Absolutely, absolutely agree. And, you know, the fact that Heyman was involved in this. I mean, we know that one of these two, Roman Reigns or Bobby Lashley, or possibly both of them, are going to be battling Brock Lesnar at SummerSlam. That to me is inevitable.
Somebody had a great idea, actually, of, you know, the idea that, you know, if Lashley beats Roman Reigns at the pay-per-view, and then somehow Reigns still gets the title shot and he beats Brock Lesnar, you've then got Lashley, who has a genuine, you know, bone to pick, say, well, I've pinned the world champion, so I'm due a title shot. And then you've got Strowman, who's got the briefcase. So you've opened up possibilities there.
Absolutely. I mean, that's just basic booking. And if they were to do that, that would be the kind of thinking ahead booking, the planning ahead booking that I was just referring to earlier. And hopefully WWE will do something like that.
I will say this, Roman Reigns and Bobby Lashley, I think Bobby Lashley needs to win this match. I think I think if he loses it, he's just another guy. And I think that would be a real shame to do that when I think people are genuinely starting to get behind him. And they are so lucky that the stank of those bloody sisters in the Sami Zayn feud seems to have disappeared.
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And I kind of agree with you. I mean, I think they can do a finish. I think they've got to give us a clean finish in some way, but it can't be. But how clean can it be? Because I think both these guys are going to be involved in the title picture or the heavyweight or the main event picture, possibly for until Survivor Series. So maybe the finish won't be that clean. Maybe there'll be a running. Maybe Braun Strowman will get involved. I'm not sure. But you're right. If Reigns just wins with the spear, then Lashley's going to be it's going to be difficult to credibly promote Lashley as a top guy. And as you just said, Kenny, they have been extremely fortunate that people have got short memories and have just wiped all thoughts of the Sami Zayn program. And he has, amazingly, Lashley, been accepted in this top program with Reigns, which must be doing wonders for his confidence.
So I'm going to try and be positive. My prediction is Bobby Lashley wins. What say you?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, I think so. I don't think it'd be a, it won't be a clean finish. There'll be some jiggery pokery, but I think Lashley's going over.
And while we're on that, what did you make of Brock Lesnar's appearance at UFC?
Yeah, it was pretty funny, wasn't it? It was like, he comes, you know, is it Daniel Cormier? Is that how you pronounce his name?
Yeah, Daniel Cormier, correct.
Yeah, so he called him out and then he got into the octagon and Lesnar looked about 100 times more interested in being there than he ever is on Raw, which I'm sure irritated wrestling fans no end. It irritated me, Kenny. So he came in and, man, Lesnar's so much bigger than Cormier. Pushed him, Cormier went flying. Lesnar cuts this like, I mean, why is Lesnar not doing his own promos? I know, because it means that Heyman has a job, but Lesnar should be doing more of his own promos in WWE. I've said this before, and I, you know, after hearing him on the mic in the Octagon on Saturday, he absolutely needs to be doing more of his own promos in WWE because he's really good. So he shoves Cormier, he goes flying, and then one of Cormier's corner men comes over and pushes Lesnar. And it was as if Lesnar didn't even notice he was there because the fella was only quite short.
So good.
And then Dana White got under the corner man and shoved him out of the way for his own safety. So I thought that was great. And then Cormier, I mean, even though he looked... When you looked at that exchange, you thought to yourself, how the hell is Cormier going to beat this guy? You know, it was like your pro wrestling. It was like, it's like set up for the pro wrestling feud. I know some MMA fans didn't like this because they felt it was staged. And it certainly did look staged to me. Apparently, they're all the big pals, aren't they? Lesnar and this Cormier guy.
Daniel Cormier is a guy who... Daniel Cormier was, you know, he was supposed to have that big match with Jon Jones. And then there's all the stuff happened with Jon Jones. So this is like Cormier, maybe his last big fight. And like, I think it's the Cornette line, isn't it? They're doing the angles better than we are.
It was really well done. And I've got to say, I mean, Lesnar cut that killer promo on him. But Cormier, to his credit, he came back with some really good lines. And fans were cheering him. Of course they were cheering him because they don't like Lesnar because he's from pro wrestling. And then Cormier went and sat on the top of the octagon like Lesnar had done years ago when he was fighting. It was just like, I thought it was set up brilliantly. The whole thing looked set up to me. It looked like it had been scripted. I'm sure it had.
Anytime Brock Lesnar calls someone a motherfucker, I'm pretty much on board for it. You know, like, is that just...
I mean, the language there is just like, oh, this is just something else.
Do you know what? I mean, I'm not saying you can always do this in wrestling, but I feel like stuff like that's just like, you know, you were talking about Samoa Joe earlier on. You know, what I'd be saying is, why is Samoa Joe not in television going, well, do you know what? I'm gonna get a ticket and I'm gonna be front row Extreme Rules to watch AJ Styles and Rusev, and whoever wins, I'm making a challenge. And then if he jumped the rail after, I mean, you can't do it now because it'd be copying, but that kind of stuff would just be really exciting and different to what we usually get. So,
you're absolutely right. Something like that would be great, but of course they can't do that because they don't want to be seen as uncreative. And Ronda Rousey's doing that, so we can't have a guy doing that as well. Even though it would actually make perfect sense that someone like Joe would be doing that.
I think Vince has made a mistake though in not mentioning Lesnar on Raw. I think that was a big mistake. I think he should have mentioned it because it's your champion, and whether he's on the pay-per-view or not, like, you should be taking some of the publicity for that, given that he's got your title and you pay him so much money. So
exactly. Why weren't they showing clips from it? And they could have removed, you know, shown the bits with the swear words beeped. They could have done that. They said Brock Lesnar's making all this noise in UFC. You know, when are we going to see him again? You know, maybe Heyman perhaps could make it. They could say, well, Heyman's going to make an appearance at Extreme Rules after the main event and he's going to make an announcement. There's all these little things that you could have done to stir more interest in a pay-per-view that a lot of people aren't really that excited about. It's not that difficult. And I think a lot of times with WWE is that they don't want to give you too much. They're right, people's expectations are too high. Let's lower them so we're not under pressure to do too much. I'm sure there's a lot of that. I'm sure that's an explanation for a lot of it. Because it's really not difficult to include these things, especially when you've got a four-hour show. And Heyman would love something like that. He'd love to capitalize on what had happened at UFC. He would think that was brilliant. He cut like one of his... You know, I think a lot of Heyman's promos feel sort of quite forced and quite routine, but he could do something so original and exciting with what had happened on Saturday. He could milk that and get so much out of it. So, yeah, I think they absolutely missed the boat there.
Let's just do a quick prediction then for the rest. If anything comes up that you want to talk about from Raw or SmackDown, go at it. We also have AJ Styles versus Rusev for the WWE Championship. Who is your prediction?
AJ Styles. Who's yours?
AJ Styles all day long. To continue the most boring title reign of my recent memory.
I mean, like, Rusev was doing really well as this tweener, and now he's in the heel role, and people don't want to see him in the heel role. It's like, I'm just looking forward to this ending. You know, and that's an awful thing to say, because we were really behind Rusev earlier in the year.
I will say Rusev was great on commentary this week.
He was.
I will give
absolutely.
Him that. Absolutely tremendous. Matt Hardy and Bray Wyatt against the B team. I mean, it has to be a retain for the deleter of worlds, right?
It's got to be. I mean, the B team have just scored all these, you know, they've just scored all these wins. I mean, this week, Dallas pinned Matt, and they've just, Matt and Bray have just really looked like nobody's in all hype for this. If the best they could do is, oh yeah, we need to have the champions putting over the challengers, that'll get the challengers over. I think, you know, the challengers are still seen as a joke. I mean, that's how they're presented, as a joke. And I think after this Sunday, they'll be back in the jobber column. So yeah, absolutely, the champions are going to retain. They've got to, otherwise, what the hell does WWE do with them?
Yeah, it's a very good point. The Bludgeon Brothers take on Team Hell No. I thought Team Hell No, again, were just tremendous on SmackDown. Really made me laugh, especially Daniel Bryan trying to do the fire at the end of the show. I just have a feeling, though, that they're not going to win the tag titles. I feel like the Bludgeon Brothers are going to retain somehow. Just my gut.
Yeah, there's a lot of talk that Kane and Daniel Bryan are going to clash at SummerSlam. So that's not... You wouldn't have thought that's going to happen if they were champions. I would think that, yeah, Kane and Daniel Bryan will have a fallout. Bludgeon Brothers will retain, and then the storyline will be very much on Kane and Daniel Bryan having a big blow-up and then maybe having the feud that culminates at SummerSlam. So, no, I think Bludgeon Brothers are going to retain as well.
Dolph Ziggler, Seth Rollins, Iron Man match, the Intercontinental Championship, 30 minutes. You know, for me personally, just it's really cool for me to see that this week, two guys who I've worked with a ton, friends with, you know, Killian Dane and Drew McIntyre, they both main evented TV this week, Raw and SmackDown, which is just great. It's great to see them involved in that. I think Drew and Dolph are actually one of the highlights of Raw. I think they're a great team, and this is the one I actually can't predict it. I'm going to maybe say Dolph retains, but I think this one could be really exciting. And this is like, I would be treating this Iron Man match like a football game. I don't want to see 0-0. I want to see drama and falls and near falls and all that kind of stuff. So I hope they kind of go pedal to the metal. And I think this has a good chance to be match of the night.
Yeah, I would absolutely agree. I think Seth Rollins is going to regain the belt. I mean, I thought that Rollins was going to be involved in the title picture with Lesnar at SummerSlam. I don't think that's going to happen now. So I think Rollins is going to regain the belt so that he can then have the feud with McIntyre. Obviously, McIntyre scored the pin on Rollins on Raw this week. So that sets up nicely the McIntyre versus Rollins match at SummerSlam. Also, Rollins was there attempting to drive a wedge between Dolph and Drew in that promo on Raw this week where Seth made some comments about Drew, which, well, let's not get into that, Kenny. All right, let's not go down that road.
Seth Rollins or Kobe Lopez, whatever you're doing, you're not sending dick pics out on the internet. You're calling him a sheep shagger. I mean, I thought it was the funniest thing. I was like, they're actually referring to Drew McIntyre shagging a sheep. Like, on Raw. Like, okay, great. I mean, the thing, I think a lot of this has got to do with follow-up. You know, later on, Drew got to win a, you know, very competitive 20-minute match and look great.
Yes.
So it's fine. The key is, like, these kind of things are fine to make those kind of insults as long as the guy gets to get some retribution. So it didn't really bother me.
Yeah. I remember years ago on NXT when William Regal was the commentator. He made a joke about Drew when he was attached to NXT, and I think the joke went something on the lines of, big news from Drew McIntyre this week. people in Scotland have found two new uses for sheep: wool and food. I think that was the joke.
Oh, good God. Like that NXT. God.
Does it, but Regal can get away with that for whatever reason. I don't know how I don't know how he gets away with it and nobody else does. And yeah, just to clarify, just to give you all a bit of regional, education, the sheep shagging portion of Scotland is actually supposed to be Aberdeen, not near where I live or where Drew lives. I'm actually going to Google it right now and see if we can get the origin of it. Aberdeen sheep shaggers.
Well,
we go. This is it. So, Aberdeen has been Aberdeen has been branded sheep, are referred to as sheep shaggers after the whole football incident when an Aberdeen player broke a Rangers player's leg. Somehow that resulted in being called sheep shaggers.
Oh, is that?
I mean, that's the end of the story.
That's the source of it, right?
That's the end of the story. That's it. You're sitting there going, "Oh, what else?" No, that's the story.
Well, I mean, isn't the stereotype that? I mean, I'm from Cumbria. I was in Scouts and Venture Scouts, so I spent a long time, you know, out in the wilderness, and lots of people used to accuse Cumbrians of doing that. But then again, I remember people from Cumbria accusing people from other counties of doing that. So I remember some people saying, "Well, no, it's not Scottish people. It's the Welsh who were." That's the stereotype, that the Welsh are the sheep shaggers. And it's just like, well, I think everyone who comes from whatever part of the country, if there's like lots of rolling hills and sheep, probably accuses people from that area and people from other similar areas of doing getting up to that deviant behaviour. So
Can I just say a personal career highlight of mine is not selling at a show in New Orleans with Paul Heyman or, you know, having Jim Ross call me the regional Vince McMahon. It is getting to a point where Finn Martin has said the word sheep shaggers on our podcast.
I was really trying hard not to use that phrase, but there was no way around. But it was definitely weird to hear that on this week's Raw, especially from Seth Rollins, who was making these references to photos, and we all know what happened 3 years ago with him.
We did. And it's we'll not go through the full card for Extreme Rules, but there's other stuff like Jeff Hardy and Nakamura and Finn Balor and Baron Corbin, Braun Strowman, Kevin Owens. But what I do want to ask you about is Carmella and Asuka. James Ellsworth's going to be suspended in a shark cage. This for me feels like one of the biggest disconnects as a WWE viewer, is that I don't think MD buys this, and I think it actually hurts Asuka more than it helps Carmella. Do you think that we're approaching the show where Asuka's going to lift the belt, or do you think this is going to be another retain for Carmella?
I think Asuka's got to win the belt on Sunday, otherwise she's in deep trouble. I mean, she's in deep trouble anyway. I mean, the match between Asuka and Ellsworth, the lumberjack match, lumberjack match it was referred to. I mean, I just thought it was a joke. I mean, I thought Ellsworth looked awful in the match. I mean, I know he was very restricted on what he could do because Asuka had to have all the offense. I just thought the match was terrible. I thought the lumberjacks at ringside, they were ended up a few times. I thought that looked really weak as well. And then at the end, Asuka sprayed something from an aerosol into... Sorry, Ellsworth sprayed something from an aerosol into Asuka's eyes, then grabbed her, and Carmella leveled Asuka with a kick. And it was just like... I just thought it was just terrible. I mean, they've got to get this belt off Carmella. I mean, Asuka's got to win on Sunday. She has to. Otherwise, I just think she's through. I think she's finished. I don't think they can really do anything with her if she doesn't win the belt. Presumably, Ellsworth will drop something out of the cage to Carmella. Asuka will grab it. She'll nail Carmella with it or spray Carmella with it and then score the pin, and that'll be that. And then Carmella and Ellsworth will have a big blow up, and that storyline will go off in its own direction. But Carmella as champion's just a disaster. They've just got to get the belt off her.
I would agree. So that's kind of Extreme Rules. Obviously, we've got more non-existent stuff with Bayley and Sasha. We'll touch on that next week because apparently they're handing in their evaluation to Kurt Angle. So to move on, what I did want to ask you about, Finn, was obviously this past weekend was the G1 special from New Japan Pro Wrestling. I've not had a chance to watch the full show, but I've watched part of it. I thought the main event with Cody and Omega was excellent. I really enjoyed it. And, you know, the angle at the end with Tama Tonga is pretty interesting. It's different. We got a match and an appearance from Haku, which I was not expecting.
No, I wasn't expecting that either.
What did you? Have you had a chance to watch the full thing yet? What have you watched? And what do you make of what you have seen?
Yeah, I felt that a lot of the guys would seem like they took the night off. Really wasn't impressed at all by the undercard. I thought the first match on the show that really sizzled was Dragon Lee versus Hiromu Takahashi. That was the match in which Takahashi suffered the neck injury. That was really unpleasant to watch. I mean, it was just like, why the hell wasn't the match stopped after he suffered that injury? You know, apparently he suffered. I don't think New Japan has confirmed this yet. But from what I understand, he suffered a broken neck in that match. I don't know how bad it is, and I know there's various grades.
It looked brutal.
It looked absolutely awful. Why the hell in July 2018 from a company the size of New Japan was the match just not stopped immediately? And I just thought that really looked Bush League. I thought that just looked, it was like going back to the, do you remember that time when Candice Michelle suffered that really bad injury? I think it was in the match with Beth Phoenix. Do you remember
I vaguely remember it. Yeah, it was pretty nasty.
It was really nasty. It's going back probably about maybe 10 or 11 years now. And I remember that was something that WWE's horrified by, that the match was not stopped immediately after that. And I would say that this was worse. But I mean, that was the first match that I felt really, really took off and that, you know, really was befitting an event of this occasion. So I enjoyed that match up until the injury. And after that, I just didn't even want to watch it. Just did not even want to watch it. So I was really, really soured by that, Kenny. Actually, really soured. And then in the next match, we had Juice Robinson versus Jay White. They're chucking each other into the guard. Have you watched this match, Kenny?
I have. It's funny. Like, I totally get where you're coming from on the stuff with Takahashi. And I do obviously wish him all the best will and best wishes. But for me, one of the things that I was really angry about was, you know, Jim Ross has now been hospitalised with potentially a broken rib.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's all for something that I just felt like it was like, I don't get what it accomplished, you know. And I'm not blaming the guys, but it's like, you know, Jim Ross is a 66-year-old announcer who's had a lot of health problems in the past. He didn't need to be doing that kind of stuff. He's not going to agree to take that kind of bump. And also, it's like, you know, you've got a lot of people who criticise JR in commentary. They don't like his commentary on New Japan. Do you think this helped? That he has to take this bump and then he has to continue the show and try and not let it get to him? I just, that for me was kind of like, I felt New Japan kind of let him down there a wee bit.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. And this was, you know, in consecutive matches, you know, the Takahashi injury had taken place in the previous one. We got to Juice Robinson versus Jay White. They're chucking each other into the guardrails. The guardrails are going flying. And Jim Ross is like, obviously they can't hear him because they're in the ring. But Jim Ross is saying, why are you doing this? Why aren't these guardrails like clipped together so that they can take these bumps? The guardrails are going flying. And so, and then at the end of it, I think Jay White suplexed Robinson into the guardrail, which then crashed into JR. And Josh Barnett on commentary, he was clearly irate. He swore, left his position, went into the ring. I mean, some people are saying, you know, oh, Barnett's trying to get himself over. What's he doing? You know, because then Jay White retreated from him. Other people are saying, well, Josh Barnett realised that Jim Ross was like hurt by it. And obviously, we now know he was, and you could see he was, because, you know, he was there, he'd been knocked out of his seat, and he was like really shook up by it. And Barnett was basically just, you know, killing time while JR recovered. That's what some people are saying. That was his motivation for doing what he was doing, not that he was trying to get himself over at Jay White's expense. So I just thought that was, yeah, as you say, it was just needless. What did it achieve? What was the point of doing that? I mean, I thought like years ago, New Japan wrestlers were like banned from whipping the guys into the guardrail. I know there was a ban that was issued years ago. And why are they doing this when they knew their commentators were right behind the guardrail? And I believe there's a story that came out that JR had told New Japan officials, I don't want to be involved in any of this. You know, I don't want to be injured in any way because I've got full schedule, and I don't want to be injured in any way anywhere. You know, I don't want to be part of, you know, the physical part of the show, understandably. So whether he was 66, 36 or 26, if he's telling New Japan's officials he doesn't want to be involved, then they should respect that. So I thought that was, I thought that came across as real amateur hour as well. Didn't like that at all. But I felt that the match did pick up from there. Ross, to his credit, kept going, which I thought was, you know, as you say, he supposedly got a broken rib, so he must have been in a lot of pain there. Anyone who's suffered broken ribs or a broken rib will know how painful that is. It's no laughing matter. I thought the finish to that match was really good. And Juice Robinson beat Jay White to win the US title. And yeah, I enjoyed the main event and really enjoyed the angle afterwards, which has set things up. And then Cody and Kenny, they hugged at the end when Cody refused to nail Kenny with a chair. So there was like some good storytelling there. You know, New Japan gave the fans a lot on that show. I think the show was perhaps a little bit too long, if I'm honest. But I mean, those fans were really into it at the end. You know, and if their target audience is happy, then that's all that really matters.
You know, so for me with Juice Robinson, I'm so happy for the guy. Like, he's a guy who left WWE and took a chance on himself. And look at what he has now. You know, he's in New Japan. He's just lifted. You know, he's the first. Is he the first US guy to win that title?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, only the third champion and the first American to hold it. Yeah.
So, you know. And, you know, I think he put a thing up in his... I was trying to find the quote, actually, but I can't find it because my computer's been a bit slow. But, you know, he put a thing up where he said, I bet on myself. And he did. And I think that today, more than ever, like, it's so much harder today to bet on yourself. Because it's not like you have WCW to go to if you're in WWF. It's not like, you know, there's no... You know, for you to go out and make a name for yourself and to actually get, you know, to a point where you've got a name and people book you and people talk about you and all that, it's such a hard thing to do. And he, it's not like he was a Cody Rhodes or somebody who already had a big name. He didn't really have a big name. So he was kind of had a lot working against him. And I thought he came across like a star here. Jay White, someone I hadn't really seen before. I quite liked him. I actually quite liked how Jay White went with the kind of Josh Barnett thing. I think it's quite clever, and I'm sure that I've backstage he apologized to him, but when you're in that moment, you need to take advantage of stuff like that. You know?
Yeah. And I don't think Jay White, because he's playing a heel character, and Josh Barnett is obviously a former MMA fighter, former UFC champ. You know, it's not like Jay White, anyone's going to think less of Jay White for retreating from him, you know, from Josh Barnett.
Exactly. And but he, you know, the fact that he was, you know, he's savvy enough to go, okay, let's just, you know, kind of, let's prod this a little bit to get this little bit of an angle out of it and then move on. I was very impressed with them. And yeah, really happy to see Juice win the belt. And you know, I've not seen a lot of his stuff in New Japan, but he's a completely different performer than he was in WWE. It's a different guy.
I remember watching a match of his in the G1 last year between Juice, I'm sure it was Kenny Omega. And I was just like, wow, you know, that was a hell of a performance. But I mean, it was a really strong finish. And and the fans were totally behind his title win as well. And that's when you know that you're doing well, because the audience are elated that he has become champion, because they, in their minds, he deserves the belt. So, yeah, he's doing really well for himself there. I mean, he was very much a marginal guy in NXT. It was hard to really see how he was going to make it in WWE. So on one hand, he took a chance by going to New Japan. But I think in other ways, I think he read the landscape quite smartly and saw that he might have more chance of making it in New Japan than he would have done in WWE. And that's obviously paid off for him, partly because he's improved so much as a performer.
100%. So, what do you think of the main event, Cody and Kenny Omega? They've been keeping this. They've been keeping this going. They took some very stiff punishment, bump wise.
Yeah,
the match.
I mean, that suplex off the ladder was like, wow, you know. It was one of those long matches with like the prolonged selling, and you know, it was a good story going into it. You know, the Bullet Club's divided, and then afterwards they reunited. So that really drew a line under that there. Yeah, I enjoyed it. I thought it was the best match on the show, and it really delivered in the ring. I think the fans were well into it, and I think it was really good that they tacked on that big angle at the end that sets up you know, the next shows, because they've announced, I think it's three more shows for California later this year. I think they announced those.
Yeah. Earlier. So you know a lot more about New Japan than I do. Tama Tonga, is he someone that you know, people are excited about getting the main event picture? Is he someone that people wanted? What do you think the landscape is with him and the new faction?
Because they've beaten down the Bullet Club, who are basically the guys that are driving things, certainly in the States. I mean, it's a huge opportunity for them. And we know Kenny Omega's a guy who can elevate pretty much anyone. I mean, he is that good in the ring. I don't think he's the greatest ever. I think there are better performers than him in history. But I think he's certainly he's top three in the world right now for sure. So he's a guy that can really elevate anyone. And they did such a super heat angle here where the Bullet Club were beaten down so dramatically and so decisively that I think that whatever happens next will work. So it's a huge opportunity for these guys to step up and become top guys. So, it's really good for them. And that's the sort of thing that, you know, that's the sort of thing that all promotions should be doing, is trying to elevate people. I mean, you say these things sometimes, Kenny, and you think, this is not a revelation, is it? This is just something that should just happen. And it does make you wonder why it doesn't happen more often.
Yeah, you feel like it's something that should just be, you know, happening kind of naturally, organically, but it doesn't.
Exactly, absolutely.
I mean, you know, I obviously, I'm kind of too... I dip in and out too much with New Japan of when I watch it. So I obviously I'm just giving you my kind of outsider. I quite like the Tama Tonga thing because it's quite out of left field for me. I didn't see it coming, and I always like when you add new characters in and you know, do something different. So I thought it was a really good angle to end the show. And most importantly, going back to what we were talking about earlier on, I think it makes you want to see what's going to happen next.
Absolutely, couldn't agree more.
So that's going to be it for the main show this week, ladies and gentlemen. We are going to head off onto the Overrun and do your questions. And then I think Finn's going to do some written next week at some point, so we'll be doing that. But we'll be back next week to talk about the fallout from Extreme Rules, I guess the beginning of the build towards SummerSlam, and much, much more. Do get in touch with us if there's anything that you are you know, keen for us to talk about, and if we haven't got to it yet, we'll try and get to it then. So, Biffin, you know, where can people get in touch with you, buy the ebook, see a picture of what you look like, and all that good stuff?
Oh yeah, and I did put. Did you notice that picture on the Inside the Ropes page, Kenny, of me when I was age 19, modelling sunglasses? Did you see that one?
I'm in love with that photograph. I am. We may need to get that framed up in the Inside the Ropes office.
Fantastic. Yeah, well, they can find me at finleymartin.co.uk and on Twitter at finleymartin or at powerslam online. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me over on Twitter at KennyMC1985, the brand inside_the ropes. You can go to youtube.com/inside the ropes for tons of interview content with James Storm, Triple H, all these different people. Interview with Carmella is going up tomorrow where we try to address the criticisms of her as a performer. So we'll see what she says about that. Patreon.com/inside the ropes is always where you can get this podcast 24 hours early and get the Overrun, which always delves into more fun topics and all that good stuff. So also you can check out both the parts of Finn's interviews with Jim Ross, where especially in part two it gets a little bit heated on the page and it's very interesting to read, and we'll have more interviews coming with Finn in the coming weeks. So thanks for listening, everybody. We hope you have a great weekend. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.